I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 570. I'm known as the girl who has all the opinions.
No, we are. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we're back. Mostly. Kind of. We're back. It's not a clip show, so we're back.
Life has a way of making everything stop.
Life has a way of putting its foot in your ass. Let's just be very real.
And so far up your ass, it comes out of your mouth, and you're just kind of suspended over the floor.
You have a cavity in your back left molar. And you're like, thank you, foot.
Like,
I'll see a dentist eventually. First, we have to discuss why.
You're in me.
Yeah. So, just really quickly, we have been down for the last couple of weeks, which is why you got the bonus clip show, because we had some damage to our house. We had a pipe burst.
And it was severely bad. Let's not even sugarcoat it. It was a fucking shit show.
It still is
a fucking shit show, but we're going to take that step forward and put on that smile and do the best that we can. So please bear with us while
we
trudge through the shit.
That's what we're doing right now. So this is my first attempt at feeling like normal. Now that I finally have reliable internet, reliable electricity.
Yep. Heat.
And a roof over my head with heat. Oh, heat. That's such... You don't appreciate heat till you don't have it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, man, this is better than sliced bread. But then you're like, sliced bread, I have that too.
Oh, my God, and sliced bread plus heat, toast.
Oh, toast.
The simple things in life.
Complete circle, you know. So I am holed up in an extended stay now that affords me the ability to actually do this podcast. So I'm so glad to be back. And I forced myself to get some time to play some games. So I'm really excited to be back with you guys and talking about this stuff. You know, we got to talk about PAX East. I got to talk about PAX East. Yeah, because that's a thing, and it's real. And
no, and I
talk about games and anime on the podcast, but we're back. We might be a little intermittent here, but we're back. And for everybody that's been sharing some love, who's been following the saga of me on social, on the channels, I really appreciate all the love. It looks like right now, as far as hardware, the only thing that I'm out is my original Xbox, which unfortunately did not survive the flood.
It did not make it. This harsh, harsh winter. We had some casualties.
Yes.
Rest in peace, original Xbox.
We'll throw up an in memoriam at the end of this podcast. So that sucked. But the good news is that, you know, my main consoles are all good. So
I mean, the best thing is no one's dead. No one got hurt.
The super best thing is no one's dead and there's like only minor injuries.
Like, so, no one got hospitalized.
Right, there was no emergency, like, ambulance calls. So that's great. You know, all things considered.
Yeah.
All things considered. So, with that being said, I'm going to jump right in, because I do want to talk about PAX East, because it is right around the corner. April will be here faster than you could be like, okay.
I know.
Yeah, right?
I'm completely fried for it. Like, I haven't really had that on the forefront of my mind. And I'm just being honest.
Well, you should, because press registration is open.
I know registration's open. I currently know that right now only Thursday and Sunday passes, there are some of those available.
No, press registration.
I know, but I'm just saying general ones, Thursdays and Sundays.
General registration.
There's still some passes for that. I'm glad to see that they've extended it for 4 days. However, like, I've got concerns about that because I imagine that now the press day is going to be that Thursday. You know, and with stuff going on with my job, I'm not sure if I will have the means.
Before we get into, like, our specific situation, I do want to talk about a couple of things that you touched on there, sis, because I do think that they're important.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they extended PAX East to 4 days.
I think it's smart. It's absolutely smart.
I think it's brilliantly smart, okay? I think it's the right thing to do because it has felt like the last 2 years that there's just been way too much packed into the 3-day weekend, and with as many people that have been going to the show, it's been more difficult to get around to all the things.
I mean, maybe not even that. I think even with the 3-day structure, I just think that, you know, the audience has been just growing exponentially every year because, you know, people are interested and they, like, make their pilgrimage to Boston to be a part of this phenomenal thing. But then at the same time, you've got your public versus your media all trying to get into the same things. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I appreciate the media hour at the start of Friday, but at the same time, there's still a whole lot of media. It's like its own separate convention that's competing for public attention.
I do want to make sure that you don't have any misconceptions. Thursday is not a media-only day, so it's not like...
No. But that's what I'm trying to... what I feel should happen. Because, I mean, even with the 3-day regular, like before they extended it, I think if they were going to break off a section of time for media... when they added this day, why not make one strictly media?
Well, because here's the thing. The reason PAX exists is because E3 at the time was a media-only event, and there was way too many people in the public that wanted an event that wanted to see new stuff that was coming, things on the horizon, all that kind of stuff, and have access to it from some place that they could... trust. Okay. That's what PAX started. PAX started as the E3 for the people. So to sit and say, well, what you really need to do is have a media only day is really the antithesis of what it is and why it exists. So I don't think that PAX East should have a media only day because that's striking at the core of why it exists. It was devised to be an event for the public, for people. It's just that media started going because they wanted to see stuff because, frankly, there's a whole lot of community media and community journalists that are not able to go to E3. And so they started making the PAXes their E3s. And that's why you had PAX West explode because where they were at wasn't big enough for it. So they came up with East to try and split all the people that were coming. Now you have South, you have Australia. There's conversation going on about maybe building a PAX North and that being Canadian-based PAX. But it is designed to be an event for the public. So I don't think that you should have a media-only day added on to PAX. I do think... one thing that makes sense is to have a media hour, but not have it just be one day. Have a media hour each of the days that PAX is open so that you have enough space for media to be able to get their crucial events. Because let's be real. Most people that are going to cover these shows have 6 to 7 like big core interviews, sit-downs, hands-on things that they book that they absolutely want to make happen. Let everybody book those in the media hours, okay? And then the other stuff is your exploration stuff, going into, you know, the Indiecade, the Mega Indie booth, to discover what's there, see what people are playing. That can happen as part of your normal day exploring around. But I do think that it makes sense to have a media hour every day that is part of the event versus having a day that is specifically only media, because you're not going to be able to fill up appointments for everybody for that day, right? Like, most of the people that are going to these shows are specifically there to cover, almost for everyone, the same 10 big guys that are there. So if you have the whole floor open and everybody's there, staff working it, and nobody's at their booth for a whole fucking day, that's a waste of their time and their money. They're not going to do it. So I don't think that media day at PAX makes sense. But I do think a media hour every day of PAX makes sense.
Maybe, but I don't see that happening, because once...
No, I don't see either of them happening.
No. But I'm just saying, and the only reason why I'm saying on the first day is because if you're in the media industry, you need to be able to be a part of the exclusive first day knowledge. If you come in after that, there's really no point in you reporting it, because... You are now second hand, third hand, fourth hand.
Well, I'll disagree with you because we do that all the time. But it's our opinions that are different than usually everybody else's.
I know, but I think for me, I think if we had the avenue to be able to be there first day and, like, had the manpower that would justify it, like, us going through and clean sweeping it, like, I feel we would do that. But obviously, this is not our profession. There's four of us.
We're not a breaking news team.
Sometimes it feels a little defeatist to walk in there, especially because obviously I came in only one day last year because, you know, life has a way. And, you know, by the point that I'm writing my reviews and stuff, I'm like, there are like 18 billion other previews, first thoughts on the exact same thing. I am just another cog in the clock.
Right. But your opinions are different, and you have a community that values your opinion versus other people's opinions. So
possibly.
I really wouldn't feel... This is me challenging you not to feel defeated. What I will say is this, sis. Like, of course there's going to be the places that are there to do their breaking news and have it first. And there is definitely an angle of that, you know, just in general media.
Yeah.
But that's not really what PAX is about, and that's not really what covering PAX is about. You know, for most community journalists, these are the things that our community has told us that they're interested in hearing about or learning about. So we're going to seek those things out, and we're going to give you our honest opinion because you guys value that. And so that's what I'm going to give you. So it doesn't matter that like 20 other outlets have covered the Okami HD remix, re-release, whatever. It's our community want to hear about it and how we think it's working, not working, if it's worth it, not worth it. That's where the value comes in. So it's really important to not weigh yourself against what other folks is doing.
Mm.
It's also really important to remember that PAX is about the community coming together and experiencing all of this stuff. It's really only been, at least for East, in the last 3 years that more of the big guys have started showing up and showing out in a real capacity. You know, when we first went to PAX East at the Heinz Convention Center, Microsoft wasn't there. Sony wasn't there.
Right.
Nintendo wasn't there. Third Party was there with their games for those consoles. But the big guys weren't there. They didn't have booths. They didn't have their big games. There were kiosks with games on the consoles. Like, it's really only been in the last 3 years that PAX has really started to become like mini E3, simply because the indie side has been so successful that it forced the big guys to come, okay? Like last year, Sony's presence at PAX East was ridiculous compared to the 2 years before where they were not there. They had VR booths. You had to use the experience to sign up for games. Like, they had a whole section versus being non-existent before.
Right.
You know, and it's because the big guys have started to understand the value of actually participating in a real way at a consumer show. Because unlike E3, up until recently, when you have nothing but trade people there, they're not there to buy your game. They're there to do the thing that you just talked about. Get the info, the MSRP, when it's available. Can they be the first to out with the news and the information, and they move on to the next thing? They're not passionate about it. They don't want to buy it. They don't really want your swag other than to give away to somebody in their family that maybe sort of likes this stuff. They're not engaged versus a consumer does want to pre-order, get a t-shirt, will do some dumb shit like shave their head to look like the main character, get a fake tattoo. You know, they will do those engagement things that become those marketing tools that you can use. Plus, they're there to actually buy shit. So they're two different shows. They have two different purposes, and brands treat them two different ways. But I do agree that, you know, because there is so much value and because it is so accessible to community journalists as well as, you know, trade industry and journalists, that there does need to be some consideration of more than just 1 hour on the first day of the show to allow media access to really the core interviews that they want to do. So they can get those done and out of the way so that you have more room and more space, frankly, for the consumers to enjoy the show, for the cosplayers to enjoy the show.
Okay. Yeah,
you know, for the artists to enjoy the show. Because that's really who it's for. Whereas E3 is supposed to be a trade-only event, but they weren't making the money like they were supposed to be making forever in their own minds. Because brands got smart and realized, we have better return on our investment if we do something with the community. Because we can market to them. We can sell to them. We can get them to market for us. Versus spending a whole bunch of money for booth space. Because carpeting and fucking foam, like, support for flooring and trade shows is ridiculous. You want to make bank, get into doing that. Okay, because for, like, minimum square footage, you're asking for, like, $25,000 a day. It's redonk. Okay, so they're paying for all this booth space. They're paying for all this electric. You got to pay if you want your own internet run into your own booth. Okay, for most of E3, all of the big guys build their own meeting spaces that are, you know, behind closed doors. You got to have that shit constructed. You also have to have it ripped down. It's got to be shipped in. Like, there's all this cost that you're paying for this booth space for what? For most traditional trade people to come in, probably ask you the same questions that the person that you just interviewed with asked you, record it. Maybe they ask a couple of other questions. Then they're like, great. They eat your food, and then they're out to the next thing. They're not passionate about what you're doing. They're checking off the box of like, okay, I got to cover this big three title. I got to put a couple of cover this AAA title. And they're out. And you're spending a shit ton of money for all those people that are working that booth hourly. Because outside of your PR people, everybody there is getting paid hourly.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a huge expense for a company. And for what? In the hopes of the article that that journalist writes will spur some pre-orders or orders of your game. Versus, I can hold my own thing in my own building, open it up to the public, maybe get 300 people to come, and if 10% of those people purchase a game, it's paid for itself. And that's what companies learn. And so that's why, you know, Bethesda stopped doing their briefing during the real briefing days and built their own event, invite who they want, mostly people from the public, throw a shindig, throw out their games, have a good time, they call it a day. Like, you look at Activision, who's now looking at pulling out and doing their own event. Nintendo straight up was like, bye. Remember when we used to go to Nintendo media briefings, and now they just play a Treehouse video?
Yeah.
Like, the whole landscape has changed, and because of that, E3 went, oh, we got to bring the public in, so there's a chance for people to buy stuff, because that's what will convince people to keep their booth space with us, because we'll open it to the public, and we'll sell the public tickets, so that way we can make the bank on it. And so what we'll do there is, we'll just throw out all the community journalists, and we'll make them buy tickets if they want to come. They won't be media, they'll just be like regular people, and we'll make that money on the tickets. And we'll be able to say, hey, look at all this ROI that we're giving you, because now we're giving you the media coverage and we're giving you the consumer thing that you want all in one space so that you don't have to organize it yourself. Oh, we're saving you such a hassle and a headache. And then what happened? They didn't organize it right. A whole bunch of traditional media people, as well as community media folks, didn't make their appointment time meetings because they didn't really plan out their security well or think about what the introduction of all these people who were now wearing costumes, which wasn't a thing that happened at E3 because it was a trade-only event, having to go through security were going to do to the amount of time to actually get through the doors. So you have a lot of people that were pissed. So I don't think that the solution is making PAX East more E3-like. I think the solution is E3 getting over its fucking self and splitting itself into, you know, straight up two community days at the end of the week, so that way you can just have street team people working booths, you don't have to have your PR folks and things like that, and just letting people run wild to buy stuff and do experiences, and the earlier days of the week just be media only, and just call it a fucking day on that. I am looking forward to going to PAX East this year. I do not know. I'm similar in a boat to you. I do not know that I will be making the first day of PAX. I actually will be in Redmond at Microsoft's campus the week before. And so, frankly, I don't know that I have the vacation time to actually take the Thursday and the Friday off, seeing as how I will be taking the previous entire week off at my day job. So we'll just have to kind of see.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that I will simply be at the show for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's my suspicion right now. That being said, I'm also working on possibly being on a panel.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. So if it comes to fruition, I'm really excited about it because be participating along with Tanya DePass from I Need Diverse Games, which is an awesome, awesome website and organization, and I fall more in love with them every day, so you should definitely check them out. But there's a possibility that I'll be on a panel. A possibility two panels at PAX East this year. And next year, we are actually going to be submitting a panel. So it'll be interesting. But I think, like, for me, that's probably where I'm going to be putting my focus is less covering the event as much as going balls deep on participating in panels.
All right.
Because I like to talk.
Which is evident by the last, like, 8 minutes of this show.
Right. So with that, I'm going to shut up and drink this Coke, and I'm going to let you talk about some anime.
Well, I mean, I've actually watched some fairly recently, which is surprising.
I know, I'm so excited. Seriously, though, if you don't watch Agent Magus Bride, I might physically harm you.
Well, I mean, that wouldn't be the first time.
I know, and it won't be the last.
No, it certainly won't. But we're going to go down a trip down nostalgia lane a little bit here. Because we all know, and I know you guys are thinking I'm going to talk about Sailor Moon, and I'm not. And I'm not going to talk about Fushigi Yugi.
Really?
I'm not.
Really?
But
wait, you're not going to talk about Sailor Moon?
No. No, 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 no.
Are you
no.
sure?
Yes, but I am
even
in...
with the new merch that's coming to Hot Topic, you're not going to talk about it?
For one, well, I'm fully aware that Hot Topic is releasing, you know, their Sailor Moon line. However, the last time I walked into a Hot Topic was, like, back in high school.
The last time I walked into a Hot Topic was...
2 weeks ago? But I have not walked into a Hot Topic practically since I think I turned 20. So it's been a while since I've been in the
It's been a while.
Since I've been in the HT. However, right around the time that you told me about the launch of the Sailor Moon line for Hot Topic, another friend of mine was like, yo, Torrid is also releasing a Sailor Moon line. And I was like, what? What? Yes. And I mean, I'm a fluffier
big
woman.
Kid now?
I'm a big girl, and I'm a big girl, and I'm an adult. And I was like, okay, like, Torrid totally panders to my body type. And I mean, yeah, a little bit younger, but hey, every once in a while, you need a leopard.
You
a
need
leopard
to keep
print.
It funky.
Unitard.
Funky, fresh, pressed.
You do, sometimes. So every once in a while when I'm looking for something new and, like, kind of risky and exciting, I'll walk into a Torrid. So I know I'm more prone to walk into a Torrid than a Hot Topic, so I'm very...
I don't know how you walk into a Torrid. I've only ever bought online because I didn't know that there were Torrid stores.
Yes, there's actually one near you.
What?
Yeah, I know, right?
No.
There's one there. Yeah.
You lie.
There's like, two in New Hampshire that I'm aware of, and yes, you can order online, but... But when I feel like I need to physically be in a, you know, a store and try something on, because sometimes they say it's your size and you can get it
and
on
they
you.
Lie.
No, and it
no,
and
they
it,
lie.
And they get it gets on you, but maybe it might not get on you in the way that you're especially
because
shaped.
Because they lied.
No, because they make it blanket for everybody and then it's up to you to make it fabulous. Which hey,
don't they know about my pair?
No, they don't.
Well,
they assume that at your height, at the weight you say you are, that you probably look like a circle. And that's not how we all look. But
no,
that's
I
not.
I look like a pear. I'm short and chunky.
I think you look more like a peach, but that's not, you know, neither
Aww,
here or there.
You're so sweet.
Yeah. So sometimes I need to
I'm
walk in.
I'm trying to give you a compliment and not be like,
Right. I know. And I just said it. There it is out in the universe. And I'm going to keep on trucking.
But keep talking.
But we're not all shaped that way. So, like, mm-hmm. while it works, it doesn't work. So, like, sometimes I want to make sure that it fits me the way I want it to fit me. And if it's not, if it has the potential for me to fix it so that I will love it the way they want me to love it. And if I don't have that, I don't want to order it online because then no matter what, it's stuck at my house. So sometimes I'll make that distinction. So, I mean, the nostalgia is strong enough for me to be curious, but I'm not just going to hit buy now, especially with what's going on right now in our country and stuff. I have to be very cautious about the money that I spend. So
yeah, don't make any big ticket purchases.
No, absolutely not. But anyway, back on the nostalgia train, while I'm not talking about Sailor Moon or Fushigi or like Fist of the North Star or Trigun or Gundam Wing, I'm going back to Clamp.
That's a lot of nostalgic feels,
I'm going back to Cardcaptor Sakura. And I know I'm a little late on the train with the latest series that has hit Funnyroll, Crunchyroll.
Latest series of what?
Of Cardcaptor Sakura, the clear card series.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure. I didn't. Yeah. I might have been talking when you said it.
Oh, well, no. So the last time we saw Cardcaptor Sakura here were the OVA movies that came out, which is, people were a little surprised about them because they released them relatively together, even though they happened between two different arcs in Cardcaptor Sakura. Because there's the one where she's, like, figuring out that she's actually, like, a true descendant of Clow Reed. And Lee's all like, fuck her, I'm closer to Lee, I'm more descended, and, like,
wow,
now I kind of love her.
It's been a long time since I've watched Cardcaptor Sakura. I was sitting here trying to think, and I was like, the last time I remember watching Cardcaptor Sakura, it was part of a morning cartoon block. Maybe on the CW?
It was.
On, like, Saturday morning?
Yep, and it came on before Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
Yes. But
shit, that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. And I mean, even when they first even released it, people weren't really sure how the arcs were going to go. I actually think back then in Cardcaptor Sakura days, we weren't really looking at them as arc driven. We thought they were just kind of one-off stories until people started realizing that, you know, one episode blend to another episode. So we didn't really get the whole arc concept back in the Sakura days, unless you were reading the mangas, which I didn't until after I watched all the Cardcaptor Sakura that came over. However, when they finally established that, you know, she is the descendant of Cloud Reed, and, like, she's actually got more magical potential than Lee does and Mei does, that, you know, like, she's gonna be essentially, like, the new Cloud Reed, and they just have to accept it. And by the way, like, her brother is totally gay for Yue, who's also, like, one of the protectors. Like, and there was a lot of stuff going on that people were like, whoa, cartoons can do this? Yes. Yes, they can. But when the two OVAs came out, because they came out relatively on top of each other, people thought that it was, like, you know, OVA Part 1 and OVA Part 2, and they weren't. They were two separate movies that went with their own separate arcs. Believe it or not, the second OVA that showed that won the blank card, actually, that blank card is supposed to lead you into the clear card arc. So, like, they kind of dropped it after the blank card showed up, because the blank card could pretty much erase the other Cloud cards, which is why Cloud Reed kept it separate from everything, because it was, like, essentially the negate card. Like, that's what it did. You know, so no one used it because it was like, black magic, you don't do that. Like, you're breaking all the magical foundation, and it could, like, essentially take out a guardian if it ever really got activated. Granted, you know, it took away Lee's memories, and he didn't know who he was anymore, and he didn't know how much he loved Sakura anymore, and then Tomoyo, her cousin, was like, I could totally get in on this and totally have her all to myself. Oh, wait, I can't do that. I'm a really nice girl. I gotta be there for my friend who's in love with this dude who I really don't understand where he showed up from, because I've loved her since I was, like, a baby. But, like, whatever, you know? Like, little kids, whatever.
You know.
you know, all
it's
these...
like kitty crush time. But
It was really intense. But, however, in the end of the second OVA, Lee begins to remember his feelings for Sakura, and, like, they can be in love again, and it's magical, and you're like, yay, they're like 9, but hey, I'm down, I'm invested, sure.
Right, let's do this, let's make it happen.
Exactly, and, like, that's where they kind of left it off, was, you know, with her conquering the blank card, and the blank card coming into sync with the other Cloud cards, and it being all united and whole, and they left it like that, and I'm like, okay, well, that's fine, so we're just going to assume that she's just, like, now this sorceress wizard with this incredible deck of cards, and like now there's no other threats. Like they didn't establish that there was anything else out there. And now we have the clear card arc, which now the cards are, they're actually once again blanking, and like they're completely devoid of any magic potential at all. And like Sakura has no idea why. Yue and whatever his name was, the sun one, whose name I can't remember all of a sudden because I'm just so excited about it.
So I'm not.
But he's like he's like the little lion one with the little cute wings, and he's like got a raspy voice like he smokes like cigars all day. I'm blanking, and I loved him so much. I had a plushie of him too. It hurts my soul that I can't remember. Cerebus, though he doesn't go by that. They, Yue and, you know, the sun and the moon, she still has them as guardians, and her friends are trying to figure out why the cards all of a sudden are once again turning blank. And Sakura is once again having dreams of, like, this weird cloaked figure, and no one really knows what that is or who that is and why they're fucking with stuff. And she now has to, you know, recapture all of the transparent cards that are now clear, and she has to start using magic that she's never used before. So, like, we're finally seeing what happened after the blank card. And I actually think that the blank card being a part of the deck is what's triggered this cloaked figure to show up and bring it, and is ushering us in to the clear arc. Because it's kind of similar, but not the same. Like, the blank card just wiped it out, but these are, like, transparent as if they're going someplace else. They're being zapped somewhere else. I'm not too sure. But the animation is very nostalgic. Like, it hits you in all the warm places that you remember. Cardcaptor Sakura hitting you in the beginning. You know, and you're just right back into it. Like, it's like that sweater that you only wear when it's really cold. But when you put that sweater on a really cold day, you're like, why don't I wear this sweater more often? Like, it feels lived in. You kind of know how the format's going to be. You don't feel like you've lost nearly as much time as we actually have, obviously, because I remember watching this and being a young girl, and here I am now, like, going on 34. Like, it's kind of like the Bible. 1 minute I'm 8, now I'm 32, and, like, there's a whole block of time where no one knows what's happened, kind of.
Did you just equate yourself to Jesus?
Yeah, sort of. But I'm sure I'm not the only one making that comparison. Sort of. But, but no, but I mean, I like, even though we have grown up, like, we're able to get back into that world and feel like that young self that watched and fell in love with this series. And I appreciate that. Because, you know, I'm an older woman now, and the fact that I still talk about anime, I still watch anime with the same fervor and attention.
What? And you could be grown and enjoy what you still enjoy.
Right. But, you know,
Just because you're over 30 doesn't mean that you can't hula hoop if you want to hula hoop and you know how to hula hoop.
I don't know how to hula hoop.
I don't know how to hula hoop.
So, I don't know why you'd even bring that up. It's like, I ain't got no rhythm. You had to
say it. I got friends who are older than me that if they see a hula hoop, they're going to get down like they're 3 years old and get on that hula hoop. And there's nothing wrong with it.
I can do the neck hula hoop, and I can do the ankle hula hoop.
Do the ankle one.
Yeah, because it's a fucking skip it. That's what it is. It's a prehistoric skip it. But anyway, I digress. So the clear arc just showed up. It has just started running as of January, I think 6th or 7th of this year, 2018. Okay. So like it's still fresh and off the presses.
It's super duper fresh.
And I think we're slated to get, if in standard arc form, we're probably going to get about 26 episodes. The opening song is super enchanting and obviously does lead into the whole aspect of the clear arc because it's called clear. So you're kind of like,
nice.
Oh.
It's nice that, you know, it's all of theme.
Like, hey, here's this theme. It's a little on the nose, but, you know, it's romantic and it's...
It would only be more on the nose if they invented a band that they named Clear Card to create the song Clear.
That has happened. That has happened.
I know. I'm just saying there's, you know, a level above that they could have gone and they didn't.
And I mean, like, I think the thing about it for me, like, walking back into this series is that right now, Funimation, Funnyroll, Crunchyroll, whatever your role you want to call the platform,
I'm still not used to calling it Funnyroll yet.
Neither am I, because you still hear people say Funimation and Crunchyroll and Funnyroll.
Right,
because
like, they still have independent apps out there.
Yeah.
So if you're on the Apple TV, it's still using the Crunchyroll app. It's just a bunch of Funimation content is in there now.
So whichever one you're prescribed to. But the funny thing is Funimation particularly announced that they were going to be simul-dubbing this series.
Yeah, and like, so that's like the Funimation app as well as the Crunchyroll app at the same time if you have the apps on different devices.
Well, I mean,
that's a spit. Like, Funimation has all the dubbed stuff, Crunchyroll has the subbed stuff. So when they simul dub it, that means that they're releasing it on both platforms so you can see it dubbed or subbed.
I thought there was a little bit more to it than that.
No, that's what the simul dub is.
Are you
So you can pick which one you want to watch, which way you want to watch it. But they're at the same time, so they both get the same episodes.
Okay. All right, so they both release the English and the Japanese version.
Exactly, at the same time on the platform.
Well, because I noticed a little bit ago that all of a sudden, like, I think that anime you had me watch that was, like, the Roku 8 or what? No. The one with, like, it was, like, the murder mystery, but they all have secret powers, and no one knows which one's the fake, because, like, there's only supposed to be so many of them.
Roka and the Six Braves.
Yeah. So that one, I noticed the other day there was like 86 episodes. They're like, what the fuck? There were only 12. It's like, no, there's the Portuguese version, the Italian version, the Chinese version. And I was like,
simul
oh, shit.
Dub.
They dropped all of them. And I'm like, oh. Well, that is confusing for me because I'm like, where'd all these episodes come from? What have
I
missed?
I got excited for a hot minute. I was like, wow. Okay, so they were busy, and then when I was like, no,
they weren't. They're just repeating.
Silly simul dub.
But I appreciate that they're doing that, because I mean, there's always been that line in the sand, like, do you prefer sub or dub? And sometimes, like, I'm in between. I'm also watching another anime called Ajin Demi-Human, which
you finally got around to watching Ajin?
I'm in the second season, but I'm not all the way through the second season yet. So, like, I'm probably at the tilt of the second season right now, so there's still stuff I haven't seen. But I know you told me
to watch that before, right?
Yes, you told me. Okay. KBD
wow,
told
on
me.
Netflix.
I thought
just run through it
right
on the Netflix because it's a Netflix original.
And I was at a board game thing, and somebody, and it's really funny because like I don't often talk about the fact that like I do this show, and when I say it in like a mixed group, I know some people know, but then I get that random person who's like, "You do what?" I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I'm kind of on the internet. You can find stuff that I write. I speak stuff sometimes. Like, I'm really shy about it. I really don't like being like, hey, by the way, I'm kind of like a meteor deal. Like, it's not like that. And, like, I'll still get those reactions. And this one guy heard me talking about PAX and how, like, obviously I'm going to go because I'm going to cover it. And, like, I'm not trying to be, like, rubbing it into everybody's faces. And he's like, have you seen this show? Are you going to Anime Boston? And I'm like, I haven't been to Anime Boston in years because I just don't have the energy of you young, spry individuals these days. I just want to sit with my bourbon, mad men style.
Y'all used
watching
to talk shit about me 2 years ago.
I know.
And I was like, I can't do.
I can't. No.
PAX,
so you know what?
And Anime Boston.
I'm taking my foot and I'm shoving my foot so far in my mouth because, like, and I love KBD.
Y'all gave me dirty looks and talked all kinds of shit.
But KBD's you like, oh man, Anime Boston, you going? And I'm like, I just got tired at the thought of you mentioning Anime Boston, let alone going. And it's like, and I love anime, and I love Anime Boston. Like, it's the only anime convention that I've ever been to. Like, it holds a special place in the yearbook heart of my life. Like, forever my love, Anime Boston, 2013. Like, forever.
Next summer, but not really.
Right. Like, we had a good time. It was a good thing while it lasted. And I mean, now it's just there for all the other masses. Look, enjoy, but I don't have to be in it.
Right.
To appreciate and love it. And, like, right. It's like, I had enough. I had enough of the juice. Thank you. Like, but
all my base are belong to someone else.
Someone else. It's someone else's turn. Like, it's time. I can pass the torch.
Yeah.
I can.
Yeah, I remember.
Yesterday seemed so far away.
I remember sitting at MJ O'Connor having a drink and be like, what?
I can do this forever. Yeah, I know.
Are you going back out to the floor?
No.
No, I'm going to sit here and sip my drink.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. I was like, yep. You know what? Like I said, my foot is in my mouth because I just can't now. Like, and that's okay. it is completely 100% okay. But yeah, so I've been watching Ajin also, which I wasn't sure how I felt about it at first because, I mean, I think, one, they're kind of CGing everything, and it kind of pulled me into, like, Ruby meets Gantz meets, like, and I wasn't sure if they were going to layer it well enough for me to appreciate all, because there's a lot of effort in doing that type of animation and catching all of those subtle movements. You know, so I was like, I'm not too sure. But
yeah, their CG, they do a really good job making it kind of feel like it's rotoscoped, even though it's not.
Right. Like I was like, this is innovative, and I'm intrigued. And then the story on top of that is also, like, really kind of cool.
Yeah, the story is actually
And the narrative got me, and I'm like, all right, I can kind of excuse some of these things that are kind of visually pulling me out.
So you should probably talk about the story a little bit, since you're saying that it's so engaging.
So the whole point of Ajin is that some time ago, I want to say some type of metaphysical thing happened to a person, and that person died, but then came back, and then he kind of got roped into being like a military weapon and was like killing people in Africa. Don't know why it had to be Africa, but it was Africa.
And it was Africa.
And like this little like group of like militia are all trying to like take this dude out, even though they're calling him godlike because he literally, like the minute you kill him, he resets and he just pops right back up and is back to like murdering. He's like that killer boss with a 99999 HP and like has ultimate respawns and you just don't know what to do.
And like his health regens.
And like, and these little kids, these like teenagers are being picked off and like one tries to desert, but he doesn't. But anyway, America swoops in and like incapacitates this godlike person long enough for them to put him in a bag and like get rid of him and run off to America. And then it's 5 or so years later, maybe even 7 years or so later.
Yeah, about, you know, 7 years later, I think.
And you're with this boy in his classroom, and they're talking about history. And this kid seems to, like, he knows people. He's social-ish enough, but there's also still something off about him. And, like, he's very smart. He's into knowing his facts, you know, and the history teacher's like, okay, well, we're going to talk about, you know, the first sighting of Ajins and what they are and all this stuff. And he's all like, is this going to be on the midterm? And he's like, it may be mentioned on the midterm. And then he's like, not valid information, and completely zones out. But the teacher is pretty much talking about how around the time that they were all born was the first, so actually it was probably 10 years or so, because they're all about like 16 or 17 in this classroom. About 10 years ago was the first sighting of this god, this godlike, and how currently there are like 46 known Ajins in the world, and they're all in their countries being like governed by the government. Like the government has control over them. Apparently. and like one of the kids is all like, yeah, well, if I, you know, there's a big bounty if you catch one because, you know, like they can't die. And like the teacher makes this off comment like, well, you guys were all born around that time. So like there could be an Ajin in this room. And he like goes back to his business. And like, they're like, well, how do you know if you're an Ajin? And you only know if you die and you come back. So it's not like something you're like, oh, let me slit my throat and see if I come back.
Right. Like it's not like, you know, the test to be a Jedi. What's your midichlorian level?
Right, exactly. Like, it's not something that you're like, hey, let me jump off this bridge and see if I get home in time for dinner. Like, you're not going to try
it. I'm going to pee on a rabbit, and if it turns purple, I'm an Ajin?
Right, exactly. But they're like, so that's the big definitive thing, is like, people only find out they're Ajins when they die, because, you know, they come back. And also, apparently, Ajins can hear voices and are being talked to. And, like, as this is kind of happening, it's really kind of funny, because the first kid who was all like, oh, this isn't relevant information, if you have your sound, like, and we have a pretty bomb system here, you can actually hear, like, this weird side voice around the kid who isn't talking. So you're like, I'm hearing you watching the show or hearing the voice, and then you notice that he's reacting to it. So he's hearing a voice on top of this kid asking this question and the teacher responding to him. And then he like says this off comment that has nothing to do with the conversation that the first two are having. And of course the teacher's like, did you have something else you wanted to say? And like it put him on the spot because he thought it was part of the conversation that he was hearing. And of course he's like, well, like, no, but since I'll stand up and say something so it doesn't seem too weird. And so it's, like, kind of weird. You're like, oh, shit. he may be an Ajin, or maybe he's just, like, mentally unstable. And he's eerily cold. Like, and I shouldn't say eerily. He's just cold and very separate from everybody else. Like, he interacts to people who he deems are important. But, like, he doesn't go out of his way to be friends with everybody. He's very focused on being a good citizen because his mom kind of drilled that into him for whatever the reason. He had a friend growing up who apparently his father's a criminal, so now his mom's like, you can't be friends with him. And he was like, okay. And his sister's really sick and she doesn't like him. And I don't think he likes anyone, but long story short, he is walking home one day with his group of friends and they're all like crossing the street and this kid gets hit by like a truck. And not even, like, a little tap. Like, he gets run over by, like, 20 wheels. There's blood everywhere. His notebook's drenched in blood. And, like, everyone's just, like, watching. You know, and it's really funny because in this universe where they know that,
it's
like,
really funny.
No, not funny, haha. But in this universe where, you know, they know that there are people who have regenerated, you'd think that, you know, people would be like, oh, shit. Like, people die, let me call the ambulance, but they all wait, like, 4 seconds too long in the shot, and I'm like, are you guys...
That's how you know it was a setup shot.
Right.
You don't have anybody, like, immediately going to the phone, like, they're all like, maybe he's an Ajin.
Right, like,
that way we can
right.
set up
so, like,
the start of this show?
Like, it's... And that's what happened, but in my mind, I'm like, since, you know, they... There's no way to definitively know... If people are Ajins, the minute someone got hit by, like, I'm surprised no one called the minute that he got hit by the truck. It wasn't until the truck stops that you see, like, everyone kind of, like, looking to see. And I'm like, dude, he could, if he hadn't been, like, you were all just watching him die. And granted, they did, in fact, watch him die. But then all of a sudden, this black stuff starts happening, and he begins to reanimate. And then, like, he crawls from underneath the truck. And then everyone's like, he's a fucking Ajin. And, like... He's freaking out because, obviously, you know, he did just die. And it does hurt. It's not like they can just die and not feel anything. Like, they feel the full feeling of what it is to lose life. So, like, he is like, no, I'm not an Ajin. I'm totally not. Like, I don't know what happened. It's a miracle. I'm just gonna run now. Because he knows that now there are people out there who hunt them for money and bounty. And, you know, he doesn't want to be taken by... The, you know, government. Because, you know, the government's kind of scary. Especially because he doesn't know what they're doing to Ajins. But sure enough, the government's now involved. They know that he's an Ajin. His, like, gangster friend tries to help him. And then he abandons him because, like, he's... I think he's a special case. And I think they're going to talk about that more in the second season. Or at least they kind of are now. And if that doesn't make it worse, there are variants of Ajins that have black ghosts that... are purely made of black matter and have the ability to mess around in our third dimension. Like, I think they're, like, multi-dimensional beings and they can exist on multiple planes and they fuck shit up.
Anyway, it's a hell of an interesting series.
There's so much going
on.
I'm
glad you're finally watching it.
Yeah. So there's that. And briefly, I'll talk about one other thing for, like, 2 minutes and then I'll give you the rest of the show. I have been watching, or rather, I watched Bright on Netflix. And for those
who... Oh, Lord. I was waiting for this. I don't have enough to drink.
Okay, go ahead. I wasn't going to watch it initially, because in my office particularly, I am known as the girl who sees all the movies, has her opinions, and, like, does a show sometimes. So all the nerdy guys will come to my desk and be like, did you see this? Did you see that? And I'll be like, yeah, this is my opinion, yeah. And we'll have big heated debates. So when Bright came out, like, 8 people came to my desk and, like, have you seen Bright? And I'm like, I'm refusing to see that. And they're like, and they all leave. And I'm like, but I am kind of curious. So me and my husband, one weekend, we decided to watch it, and I'm going to slow clap for Netflix, like, 2 times, because while the story is terrible at best, at best it is shit, the story. The world that the story is happening in is the most interesting thing. Like,
yes.
Bro. Like, they have...
I give you that. Look, the production.
Like, and as, like, we're watching it, I'm like, I would rather see what's going on more with this turf war than, ooh, I'm Will Smith, and, like, I have a white wife, and, like, there are, like, fairies, and orcs.
I'm gonna slow clap on that.
And elves. And, like, apparently we have an orc on the force now, and he's, like, the first one ever. It's, like, Zootopia, so it's a big metaphor for racism again, but not really, because we're not really going to address all that. By the way,
right.
The orc that I have is, like, unblooded.
I have
so,
a white
like,
wife, and I work with an orc.
Like, right. But it's just, like, oh, and by the way, even though he's an orc, he's also banned from his clan, so, like, they don't even like him. So, like, everyone wants to find a reason to kill this guy. And, like, it was just, it's dumb. Oh, by the way, there are brights, and brights are like elves and people who have magical capabilities, and brights can hold wands, but we haven't had many brights in a while, and the only way to know if you're a bright is if you can hold a wand and not blow up, so humans don't often touch them, because, you know, you blow up, so they haven't had a documented bright in, like, forever.
You could be a bright, or you could be a blob.
A blob, right. But, and as I'm watching it, I'm like, mm-hmm. there's just, mm-hmm. there's so much... Mm-hmm. potential in the setting.
Mm-hmm.
Why did Netflix decide to make Bright a movie? I feel like this could have held its weight better if we could stay in that universe a little bit longer and, like, learn about the history that separated humans from orcs. And, like, why is Jacoby unblooded? And why did they saw his things down? Like, what... banished him in his family line. What did they do? They don't talk about any of it. So you're sitting here like, are we going to have a buddy cop moment where, you know, Will Smith's going to be like, well, you know.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
Well, I mean, he's kind of got that mindset from the beginning. See, he's like, I'm too good for this Netflix shit, but
oh,
hey,
I know.
They pay me.
I've watched it.
But like,
because
if this had
I
been.
I too am that nerd in my office. We're like, are you watching this? Are you watching that? Do you have an opinion of this? Well, why aren't you watching that? And oftentimes people come to me to ask me DC and Marvel things.
But I mean, at the end of the day, like, if they had made this, like, this could have been a miniseries. Like, this could have been, like, if this had been done serial to give us more time to understand why there's hate. Like, okay, yeah, we don't like orcs. Why? Did an orc piss in your Cheerios? Like, what did they do? Did they kill your mom? Like, give me something to understand the why. Because once...
Mm-hmm.
And they don't give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, mm-hmm. you see these two characters go through the hardest fucking night of their lives in a giant circle. Because...
Where everything that could go wrong goes wrong to just them.
But the sucky thing about all of it is, like, the story is so small because, all right, so long story short, a bright shows up, has a wand, and, like, they're trying to get this wand out of this one barrio of Los Angeles, but there's a spell on it, so it really can't go very far. So it's this giant half circle of a story. And don't get me wrong, I like when you go back to where you begin, but literally... the first scene of the shit happening is exactly where the last scene with the resolution happens. And I'm like, really? Really?
Y'all like, just went around the block.
Like, not even. Like, they went two streets over.
I know.
Hid in a bar and then snuck back two streets over. Their story was too contained. Like, and I understand, like, the spell kept it close. Like, I get that. But, like, you had corrupted clops. Like, why didn't they try to go to a police station? Like we could have seen more instances of, like, how big of the radius the bindsmith was. Because, I mean, while I know it was close, I don't think it was super close. And, like, the bitch who had the spell on it was following them. So, like, they could have, like, kited her to another place. Like, they didn't have to stay there. You got me? Like, there's so many things they could have done. And, you know, by the end of it, you know, like, they find, an elf girl, and she doesn't really speak English, or at least she pretends like she doesn't speak English, and she's, you know, she can hold the wand, but she doesn't tell anybody she can hold it, because, you know, you don't want to let up the ace too early in your, like, movie. And, like, she gets severely hurt, and she ends up going back to the elf world, you think, maybe, I don't know. And then and then the cops become heroes at the end. Like, sure, Netflix, sure, you got it. I'm like, and you spent all this budget on this great setting and Will Smith, that everything else was just, like, this runny turd that didn't make it into the toilet. And you're just kind of sitting there like, well, that was an experience. So, I mean, and I know
that
Bright
is the most accurate.
And it's getting a sequel.
And run through of Bright.
It's
like, I have had, like, knockdown dragouts where people are like, oh, I'm really digging it. It's good. And I'm like, stop. You are digging the production, not the actual story. Think about this.
You're digging the production, and you're digging the environment. Because I would like to know the barrio lead guy, like, how'd he get in that wheelchair? Like, why hasn't someone tried to, like, take him out? Because he's, like, in a wheelchair. Like, he's clearly not as menacing as they are setting this dude up to be. But, like, here's the scene in the bar. Shoot up with all these guys with, like, AK-47s. And then dead silence. And then you hear the motorized wheelchair of the leader. And I'm like, no one's tried to take your life? Like, not once? No one's tried to take your throne? Really? Are you that badass? Like, what is your story? I want to sit down next to you and hear this. I want to hear it. And then
I want Barbara Walters to interview you, so I need to understand your life.
And then the elves, like, who are, like, super prissy and, like, glowy and shit, I'm like, all right, well, why is this one super bitchy? Someone pissing her Cheerios, too? Like,
there's a lot of people pissing in Cheerios. Yeah. And I don't cotton well to that.
Like, I get that someone stole her wand. Okay. But, like, you know, she clearly has has diplomats. Like, why are we just killing people for the sake of killing? Do you like killing? Have you seen a therapist? Like, there's, like, so many loose holes. Like, there's so many plot holes that don't make enough sense. And she doesn't say anything because, you know, she has to be stoic and dark and beautiful. And she can't just be like, someone took my wand and I want it back. Like, nope, just gonna kill a whole bunch of people until I get my shit. Well, maybe if you told someone what the problem was, some people don't have to die tonight. You know? But anyway, it's getting a sequel, which I'm worried about, because since the first story was so small, like, how are they gonna sequel it? Okay, we're gonna have another instance of a wand showing up?
Stuck in a closet.
Like, right. It's going to be like a hostage situation. And, like, Liam Neeson's going to show up, and he's going to take the wand. Taken 4. Actually, no. I think we're at 5 now.
I don't know. Yeah, we're at 5.
Taken 5, the retookening. And it's going to be like this
the
weird...
The retookening.
And, like, it's...
I can't. Oh, and I'm not even drinking that heavy.
No.
Yet.
But I just... Netflix, I think you've got potential here. How about we stop? We get some burgers
and some good scripts.
We get a nice whiteboard and we outline like we do an outline.
Look
of what
Netflix,
we expect.
Netflix, we're available. Okay, like, we can help you.
Like, here we go.
We know
here,
some people.
Here comes Bright 2. So we're gonna go right back to we actually can't go back to the night of the ending because it shoots to them getting medals. So now they're like. They're a team now. They're actually friends now, even though Will Smith, the whole movie's like, we ain't friends. It's like, bitch,
people
yes,
are starting
you are.
To change their opinions a little bit.
A little
about
bit.
Orcs.
Right. About
not a lot,
well,
a little bit.
Right. A few of them. You know, because, you know, Jacoby's like an upstanding orc citizen. They go back to that weird pool tree thing. They fall into it. Now they're in elf land, I think. And then they're going to, like, drive 4 blocks past that, and then they're gonna have their adventure, and then fall back into the thing and end up right back at the end of the first movie. Like, look, I wrote Bright 2 for you guys. Also, there'll be a lot of gunshots. There'll be 2 people in wheelchairs who are like, we got, like, the
you
Yakuza. Yes. A female Yakuza in the elven world with her group, and then we're gonna have, like, the Russians.
But she needs to be part black.
Yeah. And then we're going to have Russians there.
Because you always have to have Russians.
Doing Russian stuff.
If you're having turf wars, you always have to have Russians.
They're going
to
bring a Russian wand, but no one who isn't Russian can touch it. You have to be a Russian Bright. And we're going to find out that the Yakuza lead is also part Russian and can hold the wand at the end.
Right. There you go.
There we go. We're done.
Done.
And Will Smith's going to cheat on his wife happened. For her.
Use
done.
Devin Aoki as the Yakuza lead in the wheelchair.
There we go. Like, I hate this. There's just so much potential that they could have expanded on.
We need Jean Reno in there somehow.
Also, like, this could possibly have been a video game. Probably been much better translated into that medium. Like,
it would have made more sense as a video game.
Oh my god,
because it would have been grimoires with all the backstory. Wasn't in the main campaign that you could read. Online or in the companion app.
Take the engine from Detroit, put it in Bright, and your character, you don't know if your characters are Bright or not. And, like, the whole game, you have to decide whether or not you're going to try to touch the wand. And as soon as you touch the wand, that's when the game actually starts. because you're too scared to for most of the game. And then finally at the very end you touch it, you're like, oh shit, I'm a bright! Pow, 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 pow! And then it's like Grand Theft Auto, but with wands. So, like, hey.
I would play that game, though.
Hey, that's my idea. I'll write stories for video games.
Activision, get with us. We have ideas.
So, like, that's it. That's my idea. That's bright. It's not very bright, but it's a thing.
Oh, you know, that's the truest statement I've heard about it.
You know.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. It happened that one time.
Yep. And so, let's just keep it at that.
So, you wanted to talk about stuff. I think we got a couple of minutes left.
I did want to talk about stuff. Like I said, I'm still stuck on your bright evaluation because it's, like, so on point with my own. I got into, like, a deep fight with one of my coworkers because she absolutely loved it. And I was just like, I can't even. Do you logic?
I mean, I was sitting there with my husband and I'm like, I don't know how I feel. Tell me how I feel, man. Do I like it? And he's like, no. And I'm like, why don't I like it? And he's like, because of this? I'm like, maybe. But then what about this? That's a good point. I'm like, but that's still not enough to like it. That's right. But I still don't know
and
how I feel.
That's why you don't like it.
Like, I was...
But
I
want to like it because part of you is like, come on, Will Smith is good.
Right.
And then I jump in with the After Earth.
Like, no. Why? Like, why no, couldn't you brought this Will Smith to After Earth? Could you imagine?
That would have helped.
Could you imagine this
I mean,
life?
It still wouldn't have been great because you still have to deal with Jaden. But
hey, you know what? But I think if this Will Smith...
Don't make me bring up that awful fucking anime.
Hey, okay. You know what?
Anyway, this is my time. I'm going to reclaim my time. This is me reclaiming my time.
All right, I'm done.
I am reclaiming my time. Okay, so I have been playing Star Wars Battlefront 2. Now, we had talked about Battlefront a while ago, especially with all of the loot box things and cool characters being behind a massive paywall, unless you put in ridiculous amounts of hours, and EA had to go fix and mea culpa and all that good stuff. And I had said that, you know, until things kind of settled down, things with servers were working well, and EA figured out their make good for everybody, I was not going to touch the game. Because I was very excited about Battlefront when it was first announced, because the main reason that I didn't play Battlefront 1 was because it was multiplayer only. And I've explained my experiences before to you guys. I don't have a great track record of doing multiplayer games outside of playing with people that I know and having a great experience. So I tend to shy away from them, with the exceptions of, like, the common areas in Destiny, where I'm typically not on mic, and I will not join random people's invites for parties, just as a protection for myself, frankly. The community's getting better, but there are still, you know, times where I have gone against my better judgment and joined a public team and then immediately hit with a barrage of N-words, some directed specifically at me, some just generally in the conversation when I do speak, and it's very evident that I'm a female. Some very misogynistic and harmful speech starts coming my way, and it makes me not like the game, not like the experience. I typically jump off the system, and then I don't go back for it for a couple days, and I hate letting someone else's bad behavior affect me and a thing that I enjoy that much. So I just choose not to engage, right? But I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Massive, massive Star Wars fan. Have loved it ever since I was a kid. Will love it until the day I die. I actually enjoy The Last Jedi. We'll talk about that another time. But I was really excited to have a Star Wars game that was going to have a single-player campaign. Because I love the look of the first Battlefront. It was the first thing I had played some of the multiplayer, I think, at a PAX East before the first game came out. And it felt like I was in the Star Wars universe. It looked absolutely gorgeous. EA and Lucasfilm, the teams, had done a great job of making the Star Wars universe feel really tangible and like I was a part of it. And so it's one of the reasons why I was really disappointed that it was only going to be multiplayer only. So with Battlefront 2 having a single player campaign, it now made it accessible for me because it gave me a way to play the game, to be in the Star Wars universe that was comfortable for me and would be enjoyable for me.
Mm-hmm.
So now that they kind of figured like all their stuff out and all the hubbub had kind of died down, I decided it was time to grab the game. I got it at a reduced price because I do the EA online thing, subscription. I forget what it's called. Origins, whatever. I decided, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get it. So grabbed it so I would have something cool and new to play because I've been running up and down Assassin's Creed Origin like I'm just, you know, of Egypt, okay? And I needed a break. Need to give my poor husband a break because he's tired of hearing Bayek talk mostly to my horse. And random people who, you know, are broke. So, started the download. And, again, I'm on hotel Wi-Fi, so I knew it was going to take a while. But I did not realize just how long it was going to take. So, I purchased the game in, like, midday on Saturday. It finished downloading Sunday morning. So, I didn't get to play the Saturday like I had planned to play. And I got really upset because I got to a point, because I'm doing this on my Xbox One, and you know how when you're downloading a game on the Xbox, it tells you, like, you get to a certain point, and it's like, okay, you're ready to play, and I'll keep downloading the rest of the thing in the background, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the features I love about the Xbox, because it lets you jump in and at least get, you know, your first couple of tutorial levels and your first, like, running around on my own level done, while it's downloading the rest of the game in the background. And typically by the time you get to like a third level or something, it's actually completed the game download, so you're good to go and you haven't noticed any lag. I fucking love that feature about my Xbox One. I see the ready-to-play flash, and I'm like, yeah, let's do this. So I jump in, and it's like, hey, you can play the arcade mode while you're waiting for the actual game to download. And I'm like, I'm sorry? What do you mean arcade mode while I wait for the game to download? The game should be And I look up and there's this big screen that lets me know that only 2% of the actual campaign and multiplayer has successfully downloaded. At which point I fly open my sidebar of my dash and see just how many gigas I have to go. So I was a little put off by that, but I reminded myself of what the game looked like. And then I just have to, like, breathe, and the game will get downloaded. Once I got into the game, though, I'll tell you my first impressions, because I've really only got about 3 hours of gameplay underneath my belt at this point. I will be talking more in depth as I get through the campaign about what my experience was and what I liked about it, what I didn't like about it, if I think it's worth the money, all that good stuff. But I can tell you as a Star Wars fan, it was so cool, once the game was downloaded, to open up the world and see Star Wars, like as I remember from the movie. So if you're not familiar, the game picks up right after the Death Star is blowed up.
Mm-hmm.
So your first real mission is on Endor. I've not shot any Ewoks. It's mostly just been the Rebellion that I've been shooting. Because you actually start the game playing for the dark side. What's interesting is you play Eden Versio. It's pronounced Eden, but it's spelled Iden. I always want to say that wrong because I'm like, Iden? Who the fuck is Iden? I'm like, no, Eden. I got to get it right. Eden is part of Inferno Squad. And you're basically badasses amongst the stormtroopers. You know, they're the ones with the black armor.
Mm-hmm.
With like the red like highlights. The game itself has a good mixture of, at least in the beginning, picking out what your loadout is going to be. So very similar to just about any shooter that you're going to jump into. Because make no mistake about it, this is a shooter from the start of the game. You get to choose what kind of blaster that you're going to have. You have your secondary loadout, which is basically your short range and additional melee. So you get a grenade, you get some kind of search ability, whether that's being able to literally do a pulse to see what's all around you and search those things out, or to use a disruptor to kind of throw things off in an area and get people not focused on the things they're supposed to be focused on. Additionally, you have two weapons that you can carry. I tend to fluctuate between a medium damage weapon and a heavy damage weapon because, you know, I mean, at some point you gotta take out some walkers, and so you're gonna need something with a bit of boom behind it. It very much looks and sounds and feels like Star Wars. When I was running through the jungles in Endor, because I was on foot, it looked like Endor, you know, and that says a lot. Because for me, you know, just like you were talking about with the card capture stuff, the nostalgia quotient of something is very valuable to me. You know, if I remember it from my childhood, I'm like, I remember that scene. I remember this piece of the woods because that's where, you know, the little speed hoppers come through and then they do the clothesline thing. Like, my brain starts going to those places and it automatically endears me a little bit deeper. And I have a deeper connection because of that nostalgic connection. So I already valued the game. Like, my hand is actually physically hurting because I was gripping my Elite controller so hard because I was enjoying it so much. I will say that I've already had to do a couple of tunings for the controls to make them work for me. I found that the X-axis controls were not sensitive enough for me to actually make all the headshots that I want to make. So the shooting mechanics are a little stiff. At the same time, though, I kind of appreciate that because I am playing on the side of the bad guys, and we know that stormtroopers can't shoot for shit, so it kind of made sense to me in that way. Ha! And I was like, of course I have to tune this, because I'm like, I'm not strafing fast enough, and that's why I'm wasting all these shots. Any weapon that you use has a cooldown period, and that's a little bit different than many of the shooting games that I've played, and I kind of enjoy it, just because it makes you think more strategically about just blazing into a situation to start shooting, or to actually use some stealth, which is part of the game. So you can do stealth takedowns, basically creep up on people, and very much like the assassinate feature in Assassin's Creed, knock them out basically billy club style. Doesn't make as much noise. They don't alert anybody around them that you're in the area, so it allows you to pick off some people on the periphery before you go guns hot. Because if you have too many of rebel opponents in front of you, when you go guns hot, you will die. Because I died. Because I tried to Leroy Jenkins it. Because I thought I was a badass.
Well, you learned. You burnt.
I got burnt. Literally. Because they're laser blasters. So don't do that. Additionally, I did get to do one of my first missions in space, actually in a TIE fighter. And oh my goodness, navigating your ship in space is something else, because it's not like many games where you're on like a linear path and you're really just guiding your ship. It's just moving forward and you're really like moving it sometimes a little to the left or a little to the right or up and shooting, but things come into your path for shots. Many times in space games. No, this is straight up free roaming. Try not to hit debris in the debris field because it will blow up your TIE fighter and you'll die and you have to start again. So, got double burnt. Didn't realize that. Thought I was on the path. Was following the path. And then I hit debris. And my ship blew up. And I was like, oh, ship. I need to control you and not hit debris. And the axis is inverted. So that took a hot second for me to get used to. While you're having a dogfight, actually in space, trying to protect your ship, the Corvus, from the rebels and their bombers. And I was like, I know what rebel bombers look like. I just saw The Last Jedi. I'm going to take the bombers out because those are bad. Don't worry about the TIE fighters. Don't worry about the little fighters. I got to take out the bombers because they're bad. And there's going to be one little fucker who's going to get them bombs off if I don't get rid of them. So I did. But I will say, like, all in all, my first reaction to the game is it feels good. The single-player campaign feels good. I don't know what its length is going to be. I don't know exactly how I feel about Eden. She does come across as very badass, which I like. She doesn't take any shit. She calls a spade a spade. She is the first to charge in for her whole team, and I kind of like that, so I have some respect for it. I'm interested in seeing what her story seems to be, because she's already feeling like the Emperor underestimated the rebels, and that's why they fucking lost the Death Star, and why they're losing on the planet. I kind of like that honesty. And also, it's fucking Star Wars, and I get to shoot laser guns.
Pew, 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 pew,
laser
pew.
Guns. Like, pew, 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 pew. Literally, pew, 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 pew. Like, how do you not win?
It's not possible. You pew less? That's how you don't win.
I pew, pew more. I pew, pew more. So, right now, I'm enjoying the game, and I'm really looking forward to finishing the campaign. I will more than likely not touch the multiplayer with a 10-foot pole, but so far, so good.
All right.
And that's what I got for you guys this week. You know, like I said, when I get deeper into the game, I'll talk about the story and character progression and all that stuff. But for right now, first reaction is, man, it's good-looking Star Wars. And I go, pew, 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 pew. Winning. That's what it is. So I'm going to wrap this show up. If you enjoy our podcast, please make sure that you subscribe by visiting our site, electricsisterhood.com. You can get the links to subscribe in your favorite device, app, web browser, pick it right there on our homepage. And you can get the podcast in iTunes by searching for Electric Sisterhood, either on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device, and subscribe, which ensures that the moment we put new episodes out on the web, you'll get them. You can also listen to episodes of our podcast on our website. You can also get them on VogNetwork.com, as well as some other great shows and content on VogNetwork.com. We highly recommend that you check that out. If you're checking out websites, bookmarking them since you visited our site and you've already seen our awesome reviews, news, editorials, and you've told your friends about bookmarking it, then please make sure that you also check out some of the other amazing sites that are part of our family. That includes B3Crew.com, which is held down by our homie KBD, King Baby Duck, does an amazing job with the No Borders, No Race podcast, spinning some really fantastic music and artists that I've never heard of. Indie, J-pop, K-pop, rock, manga, anime, video games, you name it, if it's nerdy, from anywhere around the globe and has a fandom, KBD is talking about it over at b3crew.com. So please make sure you check out the site, bookmark it, and definitely check out his podcast, which is also available in iTunes, the No Borders, No Race podcast. And additionally, our homie Hamsterman2049 holds it down every week with a new stream. Last week, he changed it up and actually streamed playing a board game. I thought it was really cool. Frankly, it was awesome. But is mixing it up, so you can check out his streams on Twitch as well as on social when he's going live. It's really fantastic stuff. Definitely make sure that you check it out. And his site, smashedrook.com. My favorite recap show artist on the planet, Phil the Issues Guy, with Phil's recap and review on YouTube. You absolutely, definitely need to check this show out. Subscribe on YouTube. Absolutely fantastic. You can call in live. You can be part of the show with chat. It is fantastic. You really need to be a part of it. So please, please, please make sure you check out issuesprogram.com and that you check out Phil's recap and review on YouTube and subscribe. Tell him that we sent you. He loves that stuff. And last but certainly not least, our favorite nerds on the net, dudes running nerdcrave.com. If it's nerdy, they're talking about it. Whether it's anime, manga, comic books, movies, TV shows, also video games, like, they've got it covered. So please make sure that you check out all of our amazing sites, all of our amazing content creators. Show them some love. Share us with your friends. Spread the word. Engage with us on social. You can check out a bunch of amazing stuff that we're putting together and publishing on our Instagram handle, at ESH News. Some video stuff, quotes, just random stuff. But it'll make you smile. So please make sure that you follow us on Instagram, at ESH News. You can also follow us on Twitter, at ESH News as well. We're churning out all different kinds of stuff, including articles that we've written, as well as the stuff that we're reading that we find interesting, that we think you will too as well. So definitely follow us on Twitter, at ESH News. And you can always get at us through our Facebook page, facebook.com/Land of Esh. We'll be sharing a bunch of stuff from trade shows that we're doing. We've got some fun content that we've created for that channel as well. And we're probably going to be doing a live from PAX East on our Facebook page. So please make sure that you're a fan, that you follow us, you engage with us. And if you got any questions or anything that you want to share with us or have us take a look at, hit us up on our social, let us know, and we will do our best to cover it. And if we do, we'll give you a shout out so you can get your 15 seconds of fame. What? So with that, it's time to wrap this puppy up. I'm so glad to be back. I hope you are too, Panda. As always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, folks.
Titties.